Well, his great uncle from his father's side was Alexander Graham Bell. That's right, the well-known inventor. In a moment, Dr. Fred Bell, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Dr. Fred Bell is the author of many books, most recently a bestseller called Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light. Former NASA scientist, he worked with the late Wernher von Braun. He was a consultant to more than 3,000 high-tech companies before he started Paradigm Today. At the age of 14, he went to work for the government on a project called MKUltra. You've heard about that one. Dr. Bell is a musician, music and film producer, and he believes music and imagery will get the word out quickly. He's right about that. Dr. Fred Bell, back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Fred, how are you?
Great, George. How are you doing?
Good. Always a pleasure. God, I love what you get into and the work that you do. I tell you, it's fascinating.
Hey, you remember that time you made me play the clarinet?
Yes.
Guess what I've been practicing on for the last year and a half?
Are you going to do a little ditty for us later?
The flute. Now, if we do, I got to build up my nerve for this thing because sometimes I can pick it up and blow into it and get a great sound. Other times, nothing comes out. It took me a year and a half, about a year, to get a sound out of it.
My daughter used to play the flute when she was about 9 years old in school.
Yeah.
She played it for about 2 years, was very good at it.
Wow.
And we couldn't convince her to stay with it.
When she
was 11, she said, "That's it, Dad. I don't want to do it anymore." And I'm not the kind of parent to force a kid to do something they don't want to do.
I started in the sixth grade on a clarinet, and I can play that now again, but by that flute. And I used to say to myself, when these people are in the flute session, you know, the section of the flutes when we did our marching bands, "That's too hard of an instrument to play. I'll never do that." But guess what? It finally got to where I had to do it. But sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, that's okay. But later on, when we both get enough nerve, we'll have you pull out the flute.
Yeah.
What have you been doing since the last time we talked with you? I know you were with Ian back about a year ago, and you've been with me. So you've been busy,
well,
I trust?
Yeah, a lot happened. I don't know what happens in my evolution, but, you know that show you did on vegetarianism, I went back to that. I have had no meat in almost 3 years. Pretty much went sober. Just energy level went way up. You know, I just got bored with everything that didn't work for the body, so I wanted to raise the consciousness of my immune system. So what happened was, I socialized a lot. I've got a lot of friends in the government. We'll talk about that later. A lot of my NSA buddies started getting into it. They really saw on this holographic projector thing, they saw what was doing, and they saw my life changed. Everything changed. And so what happened was I made some contact with some people. The law firm that that George Bush actually worked in when he was 18 years old as a mailroom clerk. It's called Baker & Botts. So it's Jim Baker's one of the principals. Got involved with them on some projects. And then a friend of mine down here started a company called Wi-Fi Wireless, and we're doing some homeland security stuff. So I got that whole thing going. Well, that brought more government back. But now – because I do this bizarre stuff, and I got to tell you a story about a motorcycle and the holograph and how that works later on. It's these guys come and they see, they're very straightforward, and they see this bizarre stuff that I've got around the house. And what's happened is suddenly everybody comes out of the woodwork from everywhere, and it's like I'm back when I worked for the 3,000 companies. I'm sort of back consulting for a lot of people again and still running Paradigm, which is out of control, and trying to get other books done like that inside track. So I don't know where to start. It's just been really bizarre.
Do you invent a lot of stuff?
A lot of stuff, yeah. A lot of stuff. And I've got patents on stuff, and I've gotten recognition on a lot of it. You know, I was like one of the first, you know, persons to put pyramids on your heads. But now those studies, you know, people are wearing them, but then now the studies show that it detoxes the brains. I've had fabulous work with autistic children and in school systems. I'd worked in school systems before. And so what I had to do, because people didn't believe what I was doing, so about a year and a half ago, I got an internet show, which is a BBS radio, and I've been doing an internet show. And I got to give you a tribute right at this point. Now, back in 1984, I had a show, my first air show, 5 days a week, 30 minutes only on KFOX in Long Beach.
Right.
That little old 30-minute show ran me ragged. Now, how you do 4 hours a night with idiots like me repeatedly and people probably straighter than me, I don't know. I mean, you're amazing because you're doing what I call the big show.
Well, you know, Fred, it's a mindset. This is fascinating because I was talking about this in San Diego this weekend at my book signing.
Yeah.
When I was filling in for Art Yeah. About 100 years ago now, it seems.
Yeah, I know.
I was doing my local show out of St. Louis.
Okay.
From 6:30 to midnight. Now, eventually that changed to 9 to midnight. Became a normal shift. But from 6:30 to midnight, I was doing my local show. So that was 5.5 hours live, Monday through Friday. And then sometimes 2 or 3 days out of the week, the network would call and say, you got to fill in for Art tonight. Can you do it? So I was on the air sometimes for 9, 10 hours.
Yeah, and what people don't realize is you don't have a life. You don't see your wife. You don't see your kids. You have to put concentration on this. People think, at least they do. I'm talking from my point of view. You know, it's like you're arrogant, you know, because you got to do what you got to do because you got to be on top of every guest that comes, and that takes another several hours a day repetitively.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
It's a hard job. I'll say that.
And I don't see the wife because I don't have one.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
But I did.
Yeah, I know. Maybe the radio guy made that go away, you know.
You know what?
Yeah.
That's another story. We're still dear friends.
Yeah.
Very close friends. But you're right. It is a trial and tribulation.
Yeah.
It takes a very special person to stay married to a person in radio who works the kind of hours we work, especially if they don't live the same hour lifestyle that you do.
Yeah, exactly. When this late night stuff, I remember when I worked over at NASA, we were working nights a lot, and that just ruined, you know, absolutely. I was the coffee and cigarette person. I was very young, man. I don't do any of that now, but it just to keep sanity, you know, to feel my body, I had to drink coffee and smoke a cigarette. You know, this is like when I was 20 years old, but I did it for a couple of years, you know, just to stay alive or feel my body, because you get the night shift is very hard, I think.
Well, I love it, though. I mean, I would not want to work any other
shift.
It's
in your blood, isn't it?
Yep, it sure is. I wanted to get your views on NASA, first of all.
Never a great answer.
There was a report.
Yeah, okay.
Fascinating you say that, because last week, Richard C. Hoagland pointed something out to me, and it turned out to be a pretty fascinating story.
Right.
Where NASA, there are investigators within NASA looking at NASA and Caltech and JPL claiming that they withheld information from the public. Isn't that fascinating?
Wow. You know?
And I wonder what they held back.
Yeah, about everything. You know, like everything about, you know, they used to have a thing called a NASA tech brief that released a lot of really proprietary information. That went away. And all the stuff that goes on in outer space, and I know you've seen tons and tons and tons of pictures, you know, taken from different space shuttle missions.
Right.
Showing all this stuff, the latest one with orbs and stuff. It's just amazing, you know. That's just the beginning. Then the technology. And NASA, remember, is a front for the secret government that runs out of Area 51, the Barry Goldwater test site, Bentwaters, England, all those underground bases. Oh, my God, I have so much information on underground bases, it's scary.
I am going to throw at you tonight probably 10 different subjects and topics that you've been working on.
Yeah, go do it.
And I mean, they are all fascinating. And I don't want to leave any of them out, but tell me a little bit about your involvement with Wi-Fi and Homeland Security. What's the tie-in there?
Okay, here's the deal. A friend of mine, you know, this Homeland Security thing has been a real problem. A friend of mine invented a system that goes on a ship, and it goes on any ship, on any carton, on any container. Before he brought it to the government, he went all around the country, went to the biggest, you know, container shippers like in China and Japan and all of that, and got all the information where they would put these little devices that are monitored on a ship container that would monitor the temperature changes, if there's any explosive sniffing devices, radiation, everything on a container. Then what happens is we put it on a ship, and there's a transmitter. So every container, there's one transmitter per ship, and then what happens is it transmits the information up to a satellite. So what I ended up doing is helping the government, pitching it over to the DOD and the NSA and saying, look, this thing here could be a spy. You can make a container a spy device. And so I want to encode it in the orange codes, which are the NSA codes. And so when a container comes in, if anybody touches it, explosives, you know, anthrax, chemical sensors,
right,
it comes in, then we got some safety here on our shores. People don't realize, and I've seen, you know, like in the old days, back in my flying saucer days in the Air Force, we used to scramble. Okay, well, now what we do, we have the Coast Guard equivalent of a scramble. We'll get a tip on a ship coming in. the Coast Guard will rip out, or the Navy goes out 100 miles to sea, pulls the ship over like a highway patrol pulls a speeder over, and have to go through the entire ship with a very serious tip. And this happens a lot. You never hear it in the news. That's
you never do. I bet we're stopping ships in record numbers these days.
Yeah, yeah. And the friend of mine that was responsible for this originally worked with a deal called Iridium, which really basically became the internet. So the guy that designed some of this and put the program together became a good friend of mine and one of the users of my hologram systems, which we'll talk about later.
That wasn't Al Gore, was it?
No. But somebody with a little bit more money than Al Gore and a little bit more famous. And I really can't say his name on the air, but because he wants to be incognito. But I guarantee you, he's a big player. And so anyway, he put all this together, and so now what happens is we presented it over to Homeland Security and all the local ports, and they're real excited about it. But there's a big process you have to go through. It was election time, you know, the government's closed down right now, so. I can just say, if it's okay, I can tell you the name of the company, and it's going to be a hell of a stock. It's called Wi-Fi Wireless, and the stock is WFWL. And that's not insider trading. That's if you go there, you'll see their briefs and news programs. But that's going to be an interesting stock, interesting company to watch.
It's okay. I'll keep an eye on it because I love to see things like that when people make their predictions or with their insight.
Yeah, and there's a lot more to the technology because you can expand on it. So we're real excited about it, and the people that are involved in this thing are like Jim Baker's on top of it, and you know, I know George Bush doesn't listen to him very much, it seems like, from what's going on in the news right now. But the bottom line is we're making tremendous progress with this, and nobody else has a system. And I've seen competition out there, especially from General Electric, on similar stuff, and they're not even close to what this guy has invented. And the beauty of it is, I'm sort of like doing all my new age nuance and holographic stuff, but here I am right in the middle of good old what I did, back 30 years ago. This is what I did when I started Paradigm. Right back doing that too. So I got double duty now,
Speaking of things in the news, the tragic news on Mount Hood with hikers. I mean, they found the body of one. They think the other two may have gotten pushed off by 100-mile-an-hour winds down some cavern.
Yeah.
And they could be history. God forbid. Let's hope they're alive, but I don't know. Every day that goes by, it gets a little more grave.
It's a big thing in the news out here.
Why don't hikers though have little portable GPS?
They have
devices.
That's the funny part. They have them, and I'm surprised these guys didn't have them. But what I think happened in the Mount Hood when you have those, I'm not a mountain climber. I've been up in mountains a little bit, but what happens is with those severe winds, you go up through a pass. And then the wind starts blowing the snow around, and you come back, and the pass isn't there anymore. It becomes a sheer drop sort of thing, because it's covered over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that was part of the problem. I don't think they go into the micro version of what goes on, but I think that's part of it. But as far as carrying GPS, but they had the daylight up there and the sun, and they knew where they were. I mean, they had to know. I think they just couldn't get out because the terrain changed so much.
And it was very steep, very steep.
Yeah, right. And you can go on a mountain pass. It's like, and those guys know those passes, like a trail that's maybe 10 or 15 feet wide. But you get one big blast of snow down through there, and it's a sheer drop. So that you're done with that one. You're not coming back through there until it blows off again, which you probably won't.
Well, we'll say a prayer for those that they have not found yet. Maybe they are alive, but who knows, huh?
Yeah, we'll see.
You get some information on the Middle East. I don't want to make this too newsy tonight, but it is a fascinating story.
Well,
why don't you tell us about it?
Because I got to qualify. Before I go into this, I just got to, because I've had, I make these funny statements, and a lot of other people come on these shows and make these kind of funny statements that don't really have a background. What I've done is that BBS Radio, where my internet show is, I've got a file system back there in the back pages, and you can go there, and I have all my government documents. Posted. I have my Lockheed Skunk Works when I worked over there, dismissal where I had to sign off on the top secret clearance that I had under penalty of like going to jail forever. And I put up my NASA credentials and all that's over there. So if people want to challenge what I say, I'm about to say, and why I'm saying this, it's documented now. People can't hassle me anymore. And these are all real government documents. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I had to do that because I got. People think I'm too bizarre. Well, I am too bizarre, but I've had a hell of a life. So because I was an MKUltra and because I did remote viewing back in two Iraq wars, I do have friends. And what is the common thing right now, what I've learned from my friends, is that they have these NSA computers, which I don't have, and because I've done favors for them in consulting, they do favors for me. And so they chose me as a source to get into the Middle Eastern, you know, fronts, and I get briefed usually twice a month. For example, I had put up on my website all the information about the Boxer, the USS Eisenhower, going into the Persian Gulf a whole month before CNN.
Before anybody even got it, okay.
Exactly. That's what I do, and I do it all the time. Not every day, but the holidays. And the reason they were going in there is because they were making a show for the Iranians. And it's like, I got tons of knowledge. I can go all night on exactly the subject matter. But the bottom line is, I asked them, I said, well, you know, I'm just, you know, doing this. And they said, why me? And they said, because they want a few channels out into the American public. It's sort of like, you know, a leak, but it's a legal leak. It's not illegal. It might be confidential and 10 minutes later not, and then I've got it. But the bottom line is I get it, and it goes out there. And they want to leak it through these, you know, these smaller internet shows like I have versus CNN or MSNBC, because these are what the terrorist networks go with. So the whole, you know, big system of MSNBC, CBS, and ABC are somewhat regulated by the feds, like major, and somewhat owned by, if you go into the board of directors and who owns what, you're going to see a lot of communication. So it's nothing more than a front for the terrorist news agencies, you know, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and all of those groups, to distract them from what's really going on. And they have been holding off on this, you know, nuking or getting, you know, one idea was to get Israel all stirred up. When Hezbollah came out, you know, in over there and started sending all the missiles in, well, then Syria started, you know, taking the Iranians were bringing all kinds of weapons and missiles in through Syria. Well, then we moved in with our forces. I think it was Task Force. God, I forget the numbers are so high now. And we brought down one of their planes, and it was a cargo of tanks and this and that. So the Syrians got really, really wound up. And so we were going to go after Syria, but then the Iranians got really wound up. So now we were focusing on them, and there were big plans to actually take out some of these underground. They're talking bunker busters.
Sure.
Taking all this stuff out. And that's what this whole thing is going on right now is all about. They are zero tolerance for Iran right now.
Well, what are we waiting so long then?
Man, I don't know. You know, it's like when the war ended in Iraq, there was all these weapons of mass destruction. They're all in the Basra Valley. They're all there. They're all buried. They're either buried under about 10 feet of dirt, and then under that is, you know, they got some thing across the top like terrain, but they're down there. A Task Force 20 was the one that went in and found out about that. We know all that stuff's there. There were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but they all got moved at the beginning of the war. Why the Bush administration never brought that out, nobody in intelligence can figure that one out. That's the billion-dollar question.
So, I mean, because they've taken a huge hit over weapons of mass destruction not being found.
Yeah, they have. And I have not been able to figure out why they took that hit. Because I knew about the exodus of them. We knew about the exodus. There's only one pass going into Syria through Baghdad and through Iraq. There's only one road that they normally use. That's the road that they – when I was remote viewing when I wasn't remote viewing there, what I was doing, I guess this, I don't know if it happens if I talked to you in the last show or not, but I had taught some of the intelligence people about what I call highway tracking. And what it's like, I learned Indian, when I was young, hung out with the Indians, and they taught me how to track, you know, an animal or something through the brush, and the branch is broken, and the dirt's moved, and something in nature. You got to have a vision of nature and then see the differentiations of the
Are you saying, though, Fred, that the government's still using remote viewers?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I'm going to have Arthur Stubblebine come on my show if he hasn't been on yours. He was a major that got into the Army.
All right, let's talk about that when we come back, because everybody thought that they discontinued the program. That's fascinating, because if they're doing it, I don't think they're doing it with their older remote viewers, the people who started the program. Back in a moment. I can't wait later for you to tell us about this little motorcycle hologram story you've got for us, Fred.
I've actually gotten two of those stories that happened to me, and I had a lot of witnesses that just blew them away. But, yeah, we'll get back to what we're talking about.
Okay, you know, listen, remote viewing. Now, I thought the government ended the program.
No, let me explain this. Now, I do two things. I had taught some of their operatives a long time ago about this tracking, where you track, you're going down the road, and you're looking for something, and you look at the license plate on a truck, and you see that, and you look at a road sign, and you look at something else, and you're in a mindset, you're actually in motion, and that's how we. I got a compliment from the government tracking when the war first started in Iraq over the second war that we had into Syria. A Task Force 20 went in there, having been trained by one of my friends that was trained by me, and they caught the guy that owned a house that Uday and Qusay, the two sons of Saddam Hussein, were located in, and then they tortured him like they always do, and then that's where they found out they were, and it led to their execution. That was one aspect of it, and that's a combination of teaching them how to spontaneously read things and see things, and then the other thing is the actual remote viewing itself. Now, here's what's happened, okay? For a long time, you know, Russians were doing, you know, a lot of, you know, psychic, you know, things. The government looked at prana, you know, from the Hindus, which was, it's actually putting breath into the kundalini force in the body, which is a chi force, which is an etheric force that causes an actual physical raising of the cerebrospinal fluid up the spine. When that happens, it changes the electricity amounts of that are in the brain versus the entire body. It actually, yeah. It's like turning on the generator at high levels. Okay. Then they wanted to get into the quantum mechanism of how, this is where the science got bulky, and they couldn't get the quantum mechanism going. But what happens is with the insurgence of nanotechnology, the quantum thing got going, and so suddenly they started to see the holography of it all, and they began to see. There was a scientist. His name was David Bohm. He was very famous. He was a protege of Einstein. There were a lot of really famous people that got into this. But what happens is they started looking at how dolphins and bats and fish and flies and birds, it all have this sensory holographic information. So having got into that, they found that dolphins and bats, you know, actually create holograms by transmitting acoustic reference and object waves are then reflected back to the mammal for the neural processing. That's where this started to get. Then they found out that holograms have a property that they call distributedness. And that distributedness means that if you have a fractional portion of something in a hologram, you have the whole thing, because every fraction contains the entire amount of the whole thing, which I'm probably sure you're aware of.
Oh, yeah.
So what's happened now is that now taking that back, and starting to look at, you know, remote viewing and going into the hologram of the universe, not just the hologram of DNA or something of a dolphin, but into the universe, they're absolutely knowing how to get integrally through that hologram. They can now, you know, with the created environment with certain kinds of devices, which I've been making now for about a year, which was insane. It took me 20 to, you know, I know you've had Sean Morton on the show.
Right.
He knew about this work back in 1981, and so last year when it finally came out, he says, well, Fred, it only took you 30 years, but you finally got there, you know, to get something working. So what we did is we got this stuff going, and now some of the people that are using them are some pretty high-up people, big high-profile people that I can't name out of, you know, client, whatever, you know, but these things are really starting to be used now, and the results are scary. All I can say is scary. They're used in healing, in viewing, so in the government has come, you know, the factions of B have come a full circle now, because now they know they can take it to a deeper level. You know, you can go into one part of what you're looking for and find the whole. And the whole the secret of that is to get the body balance, a certain amount of body balancing and consciousness.
It's all resonance, isn't it?
Exactly. It's totally resonant, you know. And remote viewing before, you know, these guys weren't trained properly. They didn't, you know, it's what's in your body. You know, like your other show where you're talking about vegetarianism, it's so important. You got to be clear.
Right.
People are getting disciplined now. I'm getting disciplined, at least from what I used to be, and a lot of other people are. So it's taken us to a new level. And plus, we're older now. So you get your energy back like you're a teenager, and then you start focusing on things that are like sci-fi in the imagination, and the results are phenomenal. And
it's why is holography so important? I mean, how does it work?
Well, here we go. Okay, now you asked for it, okay? You remember that device that we talked about several shows called the nuclear receptor? And I've got to break this down basics.
And refresh us on that.
Yeah, okay. The nuclear receptor is a device that we make that has a little disc like a satellite dish. It has pyramids right side up and pyramids right side down in a Fibonacci pattern, which is the pattern of a flower of a rose or whatever. Okay, that's step one. Step two, if you muscle test someone, meaning that you have them extend or stand up straight, put their right arm out, and we push the arm down, that pushes up, puts pressure on a muscle called latissimus dorsi. You push that down, they attest a certain strength. If you put the pyramid on their head right side up, they test stronger, and if you put the pyramid on their head upside down, they test weaker. You follow me? Mm-hmm. And this is a movement of the chi force. It's a changing of the electrical conduits in the central nervous system. It's either taking electricity out of the brain or putting it back or vice versa, and that's what it does. Okay? So out of that, we were able to find out and get that into what was known as called a scalar wave. A scalar wave. A scalar wave has in the hologram now, has a dynamic. The dynamic is George Norrie got up tomorrow morning and decided to invent a brand new television set that nobody had, a three-dimensional TV set. So George Norrie goes out, and he gets a designer. He designs it. He puts it, the guy to work. He designs a sales force. He goes out and sells them, and he puts money in the bank. He hires people, and this idea grows, okay?
All right.
That's called a wave packet inside. It's a wave packet inside of a hologram. You follow me? Because it's a complete, even though you just came up with the idea tomorrow, if you're going to follow that through, it's completed by tomorrow night. But you don't know that, or maybe you do, but most people don't. So they go out with blind faith. They go out and pursue their ideal, their creation, what they want to do in life, change your life, make a better life, that kind of thing, with a complete thought form in mind, start to finish. And the people that don't do that never finish because they never completed their own personal hologram.
I agree with that.
Yeah, there you go. So you got religions. You've got Catholic Church. You've got Muslims. You've got Christians. Okay? All of these are bigger thought forms, bigger scalar waves. Scalar waves that, scalar waves that are in each religion. You know, in that person's imagination, it's ingrained into their DNA. Their DNA, if you look at them with the right equipment, you'll see that Christians are going to have a commonplace faction in their DNA and how it changes. Everybody's going to have something that relates to that thought form. And so those are called wave packets. You follow me? Wave packets. So the whole universe as we know it is consisting of everything that we believe to be our reality compartmentalized into wave packets. And what the beauty of scalar technology, and I know you've been into that very deep, and I know you know a lot about it, the scalar technology addressed the manipulation of the wave packets. It could be something that could, in a DLOR device, healing, cause the body, remember the body heals itself, but heal it faster, like these radionic healing machines. Or it could be a weapon, like these cold rays, these rays that...
like Tesla's death ray?
Yeah, like a death ray. Which is, I just say this much, it's in my book, Rays of Truth, about that, but it's an incomplete, if you take a hologram and you interrupt it, it creates a death ray. That's all I'm going to say about that. But that, it becomes a weapon. Remember when we were flying the SR-71, all of a sudden, we didn't fly the SR-71. Why? Because it was flying over Russia at a very high altitude, at a very fast speed, and the Russians used what's called a V-beam weapon on it and took about a 2-foot section off the starboard wing. So it got retired, and the Aurora came out. So I mean, this weaponry does in fact exist. As a matter of fact, and Kim Jong Il would be a good testament. If you notice, Kim Jong Il cannot get rockets off the ground. He gets them on a launching pad, and somehow or other they get them up in the air, and they always crash and break and blow up.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I had a friend of mine over at General Dynamics Convair one day. He basically is in charge of all satellite launches. I won't miss. And JPL, he's there too. I won't say his name. We called him up, and I started talking to him because I have on one of my websites. I have the plasma laser there, which is pretty good. It shoots down a 50 millimeter round going through the air, or 100 millimeter round. It shoots it down. So I got him in his job, and he starts to tell me, "Oh, that's a coincidence." Well, he was a good friend of a friend of mine, the guy that actually started the Homeland Security projects. So I got him to go outside. He's in his office in the government there, and he had to go outside on his cell phone, and he admitted, "Well, I cannot deny or confirm or deny anything. And I says, okay, look at this. This is Dr. Fred. 20 years in the government. I've had many clearances. You can go to the edge of this and tell me. And so he finally admitted, yeah, Kim Jong Il has problems, and we're the cause of them. That's about how it ended. So the technology's there.
So we're zapping them down as they go up.
You bet. And we got it dialed in.
Why don't we ever publicize that?
Come on, we're not going to publish that. I guarantee you, in future shows, mark my words, in the next year, 15 months, you're going to have some guy come out that's responsible for some of this stuff and come on the air and give you the details. I can't do that, but I can just say the details are there, and it's for real. But then there's a bad side to that, too, and that's when we get into the SSRI reuptake drugs that are out there, which is another – that's the bad side of using this technology. So.
All right, let me ask you about some other things that are going on as well.
Yeah.
I have said on the program, Fred, that I do not believe the bird flu will be a pandemic. It's not going to wipe us out.
Absolutely not. Do you think we're going to hit the World Trade Center again because it doesn't exist and it didn't come down with explosives? Absolutely not, because what happens with the HIN5, I did a lot of research. I was the one that discovered that back when I was many years with the National Health Federation, which is now taking this Codex Demetrius, and that's a scary topic. And I can go way into that one because I'm on top of it. But anyway, what happens is, they created that. It's always been around. There's a certain amount of bacteria in humans. There's a certain amount of bacteria in animals, and it has very similar characteristics. And it's just like what you feed the chicken. It's almost like the mad cow disease. Okay, the mad cow disease was basically traced to some bad food full of chemicals that these cows ate, which created a situation that caused problems in humans when they actually absorbed the DNA of the animal that was infected.
Yep.
That's the way the chicken is. So if you're going to eat bad chickens, then you're probably going to have it. So what happened was, and I have this Dr. Ann Tracy was on one of my shows, and she's pretty brilliant. She's testified before the FDA, and I've had Mark Taylor on one of my shows. He's the first kid that gets shot by Eric Harris at Columbine. He was shot 12 times.
Right.
Yeah, and we got into some really interesting stuff, and this is what got my pharmaceutical chops up, because I had always said this. I had said this for years. I said that these vaccines and these SSRI, that's serotonin reuptake inhibitor drugs, are laced with three chemicals that, when ingested into the body, produce a very similarity to what's called phencyclidine. And the chemicals are cyclohexane, cyclohexene, and papiridine. These things together make angel dust, a mind-control drug developed by the Army back in the early, early 60s.
A nice hallucinogenic, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so what are the side effects? Like Effexor, okay? Effexor has a side effect of homicidal ideation. Now, if you remember, when people got arrested on angel dust and really screwed up, they were out killing. They were unconscious because...
And they had superhuman strength, too,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Because, here's the biochemistry. You're sitting in a bar. You don't drink and drive. It's bad. You have one glass of wine or a shot. Yeah, you're still not going to drink and drive. You're going to have one more shot. Then you're going to go home because two shots is not going to put you at a .08. You'll probably be about a .04. So you have that second shot, and you sit there, and now the front part of the brain starts to get numb. And so, now suddenly the complete integrity that your brain had when you walked into this bar or this restaurant...
It's gone.
It's gone, and now you're going to have three or four shots, and then you go out and you get a DUI, okay? Same thing happens with angel dust. What it does, it works on the same parts of the brain, but it doesn't give you the drunkenness, the loss of motor control. As a matter of fact, it gives you much more motor control.
Mm-hmm.
It speeds up the electrical content of the brain, but it also hits a resonant frequency. The resonant frequency is what we call a reptilian frequency. And that, when you get in touch with that, then it causes you to do things that you shouldn't do that are going to cause you to get arrested, and there's going to be legislation out there, and they're going to lose some more of your America's going to lose some more. All of us are going to lose more freedoms because of
it kicks you into some primitive mode. Huh?
Exactly. And the Phil Hartman case was based on that. Eric Harris was on that stuff. And some friends of mine like that, Dr. Ann Tracy, she testified before the FDA. This is what the effects are. And do the drug companies want you to know this? Absolutely not, because it's part of a bigger program. And so,
and I'm not even sure the vaccines work anyway.
You know,
I've never had a flu shot. I don't tell people not to get them. I'm not a doctor, Fred, but all I know is I've never had one, and I don't remember
the number one ingredient from Roche Laboratories in Tamiflu is cyclohexane. Cyclohexane. Type it in on your computers, those of you listening, and then go look at all the warnings and look, and then type in phencyclidine and look what's in it, and you can see that for yourself. Yeah, that's a fact. Then we have these new satellites that are sitting up there with this, you know, this reverse technology stuff that comes from people like Area 51 and maybe Roswell or wherever. And when the people are on the drugs, okay, now they're getting hit with this beamed technology down, and now they're programmed. This beats the heck out of implants. If you think the problem is implants, forget it. It's chemicals and complete, you know, implants would change your biochemistry by working on the minerals. They would metabolize the minerals in your body into a small substrate mass that would have a radio frequency transmitter. But they're beyond that now. Implants left in the 70s and 80s. That's old stuff.
What do you think of chemtrails?
Well, chemtrails are bromine. Bromine, you know, when I went into my chemistry class years ago in high school, there was a bottle. Is a big brown bottle. Inside that was another bottle. And the chemistry teacher, Mr. Self, I remember his name, he says, this is the baddest stuff on the planet. This stuff is so bad, we got to have it in two sealed flasks. It's called bromine, and it arrests the central nervous system, causing heart attacks, immune system failure, liver failure, kidney failure, cancers of all sorts. Okay?
You think that's what's being sprayed on us?
Yep. And along Malathion was earlier. You know how all that started? It started by accident.
And why, though? Why are they doing it, Fred?
There's a thing called the Global 2000 report that I helped put together. It was put together during the Carter administration. It came out during the Reagan administration. It was called, and you can look this up on the Internet, the Global 2000 report. You look up there, it was put together by the United States government, 19 agencies here in our government, 44 foreign agencies, and it all governments, you know, and it all said one thing. By the year 2013 to 2020, there could be as high as 10 billion people on this planet. It can't support the life. There has to be an eradication. Mm-hmm. Then you look at IG Farben, you know, who made all the death camps, all the chemicals like Zycon B gas, financed by Rockefeller at that time. You know, at the end of the war,
they're beginning to sound like Len Horowitz now.
Well, Len Horowitz was one of my students before he went to Yale.
You're kidding me.
No. I was doing this. I'm the one that told him that AIDS was chemically created, and he went out and proved me wrong. Guess what? He agrees with me now.
Yeah, he does. Stay with us, Fred. I want to pick up the chemtrail story when we come right back at the top of the hour. Our guest is Dr. Fred Bell. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with our very special guest, Dr. Fred Bell. Dr. Bell, your website is paradigm.com, right?
That's correct. Or you can type in Dr. Fred Bell. And that'll take you right to the website, either one. On the Google search engine, just type in Dr. Fred Bell, and the website comes right up.
Back to chemtrails. Chemtrails. So you think because of population control, eventually,
they're going to do us. Yeah, let me explain how it started. Okay, first of all, bromine causes cancer, damages skin, damages the liver, causes depression and brain damage. Well, that's great because that sells. The drug companies love that. You know, it causes damages the nervous system and the muscles, and it also reduces the male sperm count, causing malformed sperm, resulting in birth defects, and males can't perform. So there goes your Vicodin and your Viagra and all that. It creates nice markets, combined with chlorine, which they do in jet fuel, it has 97 carcinogens, 82 mutagens, 28 acute and chronic toxic, and 23 tumor promoters. So it's not really good stuff. So where it started back was World War II. In high flying, you remember the old F-86 in the Korean War, the corridor down there, the big alley they called it.
It was reliable.
Yeah, they were reliable. But you remember the old term? You don't hear it anymore in jet engines called flame out.
Uh huh.
The thing with the engine would just quit. They had a lot of problems. That's why they didn't put them on commercial airliners. Or if they did, they had turboprop engines and stuff. Because what happened is that they found in those days it was JP2 jet fuel number two. Form of kerosene, and what happens is in gas tanks of these jets for a long period of time being used, these bacteria and mold would grow in there. Even though they're flying at 40 degrees below zero at a high altitude, this kerosene would start getting full of all kinds of compounds that formed in there, and they would clog up the fuel pump and the filters. You couldn't filter the stuff out. So they had to make an additive. And so every time they made an additive to a jet fuel, they always added a JP3, JP4, et cetera. Well, they got up around JP8, and bromine, because it's so deadly, seemed to be one of the best things. But I think somebody along the way decided, well, if we put bromine in JP8 fuel and fly around with it, we're going to be, you know, it's a natural aerosol. And so we just keep putting these chemtrails up with this stuff in it for a long period of time, and the populace is going to have definitely negative effects. And so that's how it all started, keeping the fuel lines clean. So, you know, they got it, you know, they combined, you know, crop spraying and then malathion. Malathion was originally used in Vietnam, but before that it was used in the 50s in Japanese tests for fertility and birth control. That's where malathion came from, and then became Agent Orange. So this goes back to malathion, and this in the early literature back when the the Executive Intelligence Review magazine, EIR magazine in 82, for example, it was a Lyndon LaRoche publication. He's sort of like Alex Jones of that time, but he got in more trouble, and so as a result of that, he got Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig to admit there was a depopulation policy in effect in Vietnam. So that's where the grassroots of all this stuff started. And then when I spent 20 years with the National Health Federation, which is now in the Codex fight, we learned about all this stuff. And I met doctors and I met scientists, and I learned, I mean, I just make it up. And I learned how all this was put together, and that's what was my background. I wasn't in favor of it, but in doing my due diligence on malathion, all this other stuff came up. It's very sophisticated now. It's very deadly.
It's all over the country.
It's all over the – yeah, it is. It is. And it hurts animals. It doesn't just hurt people. And, you know, they don't care, because I'm sure when you're coming – you fly around in commercial jets, right?
Oh, yeah, lots.
And you look out the wings, and on each wing you see that white spray coming off, you know, of the fuel, you know, because
right.
they can't land what's called heavy. A jet has to fly, a certain amount of weight. If you can't land too heavy to break the landing gear, and if they're going on a tailwind on a six-hour flight, they're coming in heavy. They got too much fuel, and they have to blow it out. So where do they blow it out? Right over your house. And that's another thing that's accepted in our society, which I've been down on, is the jettisoning of fuel. And, of course, that bromine is in that fuel. It's not very good stuff.
No, it's not. And you know what? And it's hitting all of us, and people just aren't aware of these things.
Yeah, I know. That's why years ago, when I started Paradigm, I saw all this coming. And in the my old archives, it's up there on my website. I saw all this stuff coming, and that's when I started making all this crazy stuff that I make at Paradigm. And it's like I didn't want to do this. I made more money in other things that I did, and it was more comfortable. But I got into this because that was what my destiny was. And so now we're able to help people, you know, with all of these problems. But it's a big deal. You got the environment is a very bad place to be. And you know, I invented negative ionizers. I worked with Richard Thalheimer, and that ion breeze that he's using, I educated him in 84, 85 at Sharper Image. He was my student for about a year and a half. That's why the ion breeze came out. I couldn't sell him an ionizer because I couldn't make one as cheap as he wanted to make it.
You made him $1 million.
I know. No kidding.
$1 billion.
Billion now. Yeah, saved his company. So anyway, when I was teaching him, he used to talk to me. I'd tell him negative ions. You know, Ion Kornblum's work at the University of Pennsylvania back in the 30s when people got burned. You ionized the room and the burn went away really fast. So I developed a lot of negative ions. I used to work with Dr. Donsbach. We produced thousands of them, but we couldn't make them for Sharp Image because, you know, it was too expensive in those days. But my point in this is bromine. We have a negative ionizer on. Bromine doesn't care if it's on or not. It still gets in your body. That's the scary thing about this one, because it is a very refined aerosol. So negative ionizers, a lot of the air pollution equipment doesn't purify bromine. That's why it's the nerve agent of choice.
Definitely got to keep following up on that. Did your father, was he the one who brought the London Bridge over to the United States?
Yeah, him and C.V. Woods and Bob McCulloch, they were partners. And I was a kid then, I was in 56. Matter of fact,
they bought the bridge, right?
Yeah, they bought that. McCulloch thought they were getting a tower bridge. He paid $1 million for it. Then my dad, reverse engineer, they brought over and put it in a hole in the desert. And that was called Site 6, which is, we call it Site 6. In those days, they flew out of Long Beach. They had a thing called McCulloch Airlines. So the crews and everybody, the workers, all flew out. They had their own little airport out there, and it was called Site 6.
Well, why did they put a bridge in the desert?
because later on when the dam, Parker Dam, was put in, the dam would put water in there, and then it would be a lake under it, and there would be, you know, what became Havasu City.
Okay.
Now, these guys were smart. You know,
they were thinking way ahead.
Yeah, Bob Tishman was another guy. These were the shakers and movers that built L.A., and I was blessed to know a few of them, you know.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Your dad make some money on that eventually?
Yeah, they did. McCulloch made quite a bit of money. My dad made quite a bit of money. But unfortunately, neither one of them was into what I call good health practices.
Yeah.
And so as a result, they didn't really live long enough to spend it, you know.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
That is a shame. But it sounds like you come from a family of inventors. I mentioned Alexander Graham Bell.
Yeah, Alexander Graham Bell. I got a picture of him hanging on the wall. If you ever come to Southern California, come on over.
I live in Southern California.
My house is like a museum in here. People come from all over.
Well, I live in Los Angeles, Fred.
Well, you ought to come down here sometime. I'll show you pictures that'll blow your socks off of the stuff that I do and things I make. This house,
you're down in Laguna Beach, right?
Yeah, Laguna Beach. This house is like a museum in here. I mean, I don't like it is, and it's every wall is covered with something of something, you know, and it's all cool, you know. But the energy, I've got lasers. There's 30 lasers in the living room. When we do our seminars, like the one coming up in June, I'll have shifts come through here. There'll be so many people come that I can't even run one laser show in the evening. I've got to run two or three. You know, it's
all right. Now you tell me about this motorcycle story.
Okay, the motorcycle story. Okay. First of all, visualize the holographic projector. Now, when we spoke last time, we had made the necklace version. Remember that? It was the one that it's like a double receptor.
Yes.
You sort of remember it. You wear it around your body, and remember the receptor re-spirals the DNA. The nuclear receptor re-spirals the DNA. The old satellite dish makes. In other words, when you get older, your DNA de-spirals. That's aging of skin, cracking skin. So we fixed that problem. We also have a nutritional line that goes with it. So then we made that double one, which de-spirals DNA into the fourth dimension. So what it does is it causes the vibratory rate of the DNA not to be worrying about replication anymore, and it can now relax, and it starts to sort of like de-spiral, but it's actually re-spiraling in the next level. It's like the fourth dimension, okay, if you can understand this. In other words, your body's becoming more etheric when you wear this thing. And it's this double helix thing that you wear. It's like two receptors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we made that, and I have people that test them. I have several medical clinics, medical doctors test my stuff. The FDA said that they would give me on my receptor. They tested, and they said, if you go to the University of California and finish up your due diligence over there, which I haven't had the time to do, we'll let you make a medical claim. I thought that was kind of cool. This was a call out of Washington about 3 years ago. I haven't done that yet.
Because normally they never let that happen.
No, but they will now because they have families. And like I say, I do work with a few people that work in the government, and they're all human. I work with a humanized side of it, and they do care, and they do believe in this, and they have a positive attitude. So what happened was we started finding that people became more etheric. People could start seeing things they didn't see before. The receptor made them give them energy, and if they had a backache or something, that backache would be gone. You know, the receptor didn't do it, but they did it themselves, but it opened up the pathway for the blockages. Remember, your body heals yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So we got into this new thing, and people start becoming psychic, and they start telling me things. I don't know where all this stuff's coming from. First, I don't believe it. You know, these guys are nuts. So then, finally, and I wish I could just name some names. Oh, my God, I wish I could name some names. You'd be blown away. But so then the next step was, let's kick the power up a notch. So we made one that was 9 inches long. And that, I had to hire 26 engineers, the CAD drawings, to get the dimensions right because it's so complicated. So we made the first one. It's 9 inches long, and it's like a giant one. It weighs about 5 pounds. And what we found is that, you know, because of the way it amplifies what I was talking about earlier, with the psi characteristics of what the Russians were doing, the psi phenomenon, it amplifies the holy heck out of that tremendously.
Can you hear it when it's turned on?
You see, you don't turn it on. You set it there. You got a couple of lasers that you occasionally shoot into it, and you just sit there and you look at it and you talk to it. I mean, it isn't the dumbest thing you've ever heard. You talk to this thing and you're wearing this other thing around your neck. But now the power gets really powerful.
Well, what do you mean you talk to it?
Well, this is my.
What do you say to it?
Well, you ask it to do something, just like you're talking to, because it's a hologram. What you're really doing is you're resonating DNA frequencies in your body, and that's transmitting it into. Remember all these wave packets that we talked about? Remember the wave packets?
Right, so it's like when you're a kid and you're playing baseball and you're telling yourself, "I'm going to hit the ball."
Exactly. And who told you you couldn't? Well, your parents might have said you're not cut out for baseball. Your peers said
or whatever, yeah.
And so what happens is this beautiful programming that we have as children gets deprogrammed until we're out in a rat race trying to pay the rent or the house payment. That's where you end up. Well, I wasn't going to go there. There's no way I'm going there, you know. So I start playing with it. Well, an actress got a hold of one of these things up in Hollywood, one you'd know, but I won't name it. She started saying, you know, I would say she's going to call me right now and have somebody here, and she would call within 5 minutes. And I did that several times. And then she did it to me. That was a couple of years ago when we first got them going. Okay? So finally we started getting a little more and more daring. Now, I'm not a materialistic person any more than anybody else. I like to have my toys to relax, but I've lived in the same house for 31 years. I've always had about five or six nice cars. I had them before I started Paradigm. I rotated them into newer models, and I've always had a motorcycle collection. But
all right.
A few years ago, about 10 years ago, I wanted to get, and there's a picture of it on my website, it's the motorcycle that I had when I was 18 and 19 years old, and the picture was actually taken at my after my sister, my half-sister's funeral, when she died 10 years old getting kicked in the head with a horse. So that motorcycle had a lot. It was in that picture. There's me. I sort of look like James Dean, and it was taken back in 1960, and it's a 59 Honda. So I called up. You know, I've collected a lot of bikes that I owned as a child, you know, similar ones, not the same ones, but similar models. And I called up a friend of mine, Bill Arizio, who's the number one Honda collector in the United States, and Bill Silver, who wrote the number one book on Hondas, and we became friends. And I said to Bill, I had this bike. It was taller than a normal Honda Dream. It had a really, really weird gas tank on it, and it was much, much faster. It was a 250, and it was faster than a 305. And he says, oh, that would be a CE71 dry sump.
Exactly what it was.
Yeah. And I said, well, that's what I had. And I says, okay, go get me one. Where do I get one of these things? And he says, well, I've got two of them. There's probably about 30 of them in the world right now. They only made 300 of them. And I've got two of them. And I'd sell you one. I says, how much? And this is 10 years ago. He says, I can let this thing go around 18,000. And I'm like, what? You know, I can't do 18,000, you know. For that. So 7 or 8 years go by, and I call him up again, and I said to him, you know, if you still got that one, yeah, he says, I'm about to sell it in Japan, you can have it for $36,000 now. I think, hell, I'm up in Ferrari range now, you know, so that wasn't going to work. You know, I'm not quite that wealthy for motorcycles. So
right.
I sat down, and I said, why not? And Mikkel, who's here with me, she saw me do this. It was about a year and a half ago. I said, I'm going to ask this receptor, because all these people are getting all this stuff, and they're doing all this healing stuff. You know, people are getting material things, healing things are happening. I said, I'm going to ask that stupid holographic projector. I had one then, a big one on the desk here. I'm looking at it right now. And I said, I'm going to ask for my motorcycle, you know. What happened was next, about a few days later, I was surfing the net, and I saw one that was a little beat up, but not bad. It looked like mine. So I called the guy, and he was back on the East Coast. His name was Bill Pryor. And I called him. He was in Pennsylvania. And I called him up, and I said, that's kind of a neat-looking motorcycle. I had one of those just like that, in that color. Would you sell it? And he says, nope. I'm restoring it. So I made him an offer. I says, well, if you ever decide to sell it, would you please call me? So I waited. I went back, and I sat down in front of this thing, and I says, make him sell it. I'm serious. I've absolutely got 10 witnesses. So I said, make him sell it. So he sends me an email. About 3 weeks later, he sends me an email and says, I'm thinking about selling it now. So then I called him up, and I said, I sent him an email. I said, how much do you want for it? He said, $15,000. Okay. I said, okay. But before he could say no, I went down to my bank and got me a cashier's check for $15,000. And the next day, when he woke up, he had it in his hand. And so I got the bike out here. Now, the bike gets out here. Now, you got to understand the next part of the story. I bought this from Hat Motorcycles down in Biloxi, Mississippi, when I was in the Air Force, in my early Air Force training. The same bike, and I know it was mine coming, and it was serial number 2. That I knew. And during that time, I had raced this bike. We used to have lime races at night, and you drive down the highway in the middle of the swamps, beautiful pavement, and you know, and you come to an intersection in the middle of nowhere, and you throw a lime bag down. And you had 3 choices which way to go, and if you went the wrong way and didn't find the lime bag within 100 feet, you got to turn around and go back. And we'd run all over the swamps in the middle of the night doing that. We was out doing a race like that one night in Biloxi, between Biloxi and Gulfport, actually, and where Brett Favre is from, I might add. So anyway, we're out there, and this guy was on a BSA, and I was behind him. I hit the line bag, got the wrong one, turned around, got the right one, and saw him straight ahead about a mile down the road, straight ahead on the swamp. So I laid down the back of that hunt, and I floored it. I was up to about 90, but I didn't realize there was a curve in the road between him. So I went off the road. The bike flipped up in the air, clipped the top of a pine tree, landed next to me. The handlebar slammed into the into the gas tank, and it skipped up the top of the handlebars and the clutch and the throttle. So I couldn't ride the bike. So the guys behind me came along. We turned the bike over. They pulled the handlebar out from the gas tank, and now I could ride. I rode it back and traded it in for a Triumph G110 about a week later. When I got this bike, it still had the road rash, the bent front fender, where I screwed it up. All the damage was there. And what happened was the guy named Joel Luxick from my squadron wanted that bike so bad. He was from Pennsylvania. He bought it and rode it up there, and it went into a garage and stayed there all these years. So I have it back. So that made me a believer, you know. That's just one story. There's others, but believe me.
Is there anything you can't ask this thing?
You can ask it to do anything you want. I mean, literally, and I challenge anybody to prove me that you can't do it, because nobody has proven that they can't do it. Nobody has ever sent one of these things back, and we've sold a lot of them. We don't even
advertise
them.
You know what, Fred, you should, and I'm telling you, send me one to L.A. if you want.
I will.
And I will test it, and then I'll report it as accurately as I can on the program.
I will send you one.
Is that fair?
I will send you one that you wear around your neck, and I will send you one that... that you can put in front of you. I will send them to you. I'll call tomorrow the office and get all the information.
Yeah, send them to the Premier Networks in Sherman Oaks.
Okay, I will.
And it'll be waiting for me when I come back right after the first of the year, okay?
Yeah, I'll have both of them there for you.
Stay with us. We're going to continue talking. And what I'll do is I'll test it. I'll ask it some things, and I'll tell you what happened. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'm waiting for the day, Fred, where you will probably invent some time machine.
I've already done that. It's in my book. You know, that's in the Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light. It's called the T1 Time Travel Transposer. That's my. I did that.
How's it work?
Huh?
How's it work?
Well, here we go again. Knowing what I do know about it now versus what I knew about it then is different. I'd have to describe it, but what it does is this. It you know, you and I are connected right now, and we got a lot of listeners out there.
Right.
All your listeners, and we're all connected in one thought train, blah blah blah. But if I were to take myself and suddenly speed up my thinking process and the electrical processes and the etheric processes like we're talking about in the holographic projector, then what happens is you start moving out of that big group consciousness, and we go into what we call a Stargate scenario, which is where we're actually working in it now. A Stargate scenario is we use four of these big standalone projectors and lasers and modulations. And on my website, you can actually see my daughter, who's about 18, partially dematerializing. We actually caught it on camera. We had a film crew come down here from a show that I used to do when I was working on a project with some people over at Microsoft, and you can actually see what we're able to do. So that technology is there, and it will be covered more in my new book, Inside Track, but there's a lot of it in the Rays of Truth. That's the best way to explain it without going into technical deals and, you know, details and boring everybody, you know.
Well, there's so much going on. It really is.
Yeah, I've been doing this all my life. I'm 63 now, and I've been doing it since I was about 5, you know. So I'm completely a psycho case. You know that. I know it. But somehow or other, you guys let me come on and talk about it. And I wasn't able to back it up. You know, and I also wanted to clarify something with the motorcycle. I don't want people to think it's a materialistic thing. We've got a lady by the name of Dr. Valerie Olmsted that I'll put our listeners in contact with when I hand the phone numbers out later, and a guy named Stephen Barris on the East Coast. He's been using my stuff. And the Prince of Japan, the son of the Emperor, just recently asked Steve Barish to come over as a guest of Japan and explain my technology to the Japanese and all the healers in Kyoto and give seminars on this. So we're getting worldwide recognition by what I would call the more avant-garde governmental sources, you know.
Did you do any work into the Philadelphia experiment?
Funny you should bring that up. This is something I had some announcements that I wanted to make, okay?
And this is unrehearsed. This is spontaneous.
Yeah. Now, I worked on it. I'll explain that in a minute. But I have the master controller here at my house from the USS Eldridge. It's a Leeds and Northrop master controller. It's a device that did all the magnetic controllers. And I'm about to put that up on eBay with a complete explanation. My eBay name is Fred Bell. And that came out of the USS Eldridge. I have it here. It's authentic. I'll put the authenticity to it up with the website. But, yes, I worked it. When I worked for Dr. Katz at the University of Michigan in the Randolph Laboratory, any of you University of Michigan guys out there that know back in the 50s, remember the Randolph Lab. It was seven levels underground, cyclotrons, synchrotrons, et cetera, et cetera. What we did in there, now remember the Eldridge was running around Philadelphia in the mid-40s, about the year right. I was born, but I was like 14 years old. This is when I was working for the government, starting to as a student. We were doing tests with a synchrotron and a cyclotron, generating these fields that was generated on the Eldridge to make things dematerialize and to make things disappear. And remember, that whole thing started, as I said years ago on your shows, that all started from minesweepers going through the Bermuda Triangle mm-hmm. and becoming invisible, and it went into stealth technology. But yes, I worked on it under Dr. Katz, K-A-T-Z. You can Google him. Yeah, I worked on it for about a year and a half. It was fascinating work. I didn't know it wasn't called the Philadelphia Experiment, by the way, then. That name, that handle came later.
That was when was it Charles Berlitz wrote the book?
Yeah. Another client of mine, Charles Berlitz, is a great client of mine. We have a device called a Firestar that amplifies your auric frequencies. We've been selling for like 20 years. He was one of the first ones to go down into the to Majorca and set up seminars, and also Stephen Greer used them too to make contact with extraterrestrial entities. It all came from that technology. You know, this is what I've been doing for a long time. But people like Charles Berlitz, he was a great client for many, many years.
You are a believer in extraterrestrial life, then, aren't you?
Yeah, of course I am. I've had contact. You know, I'm known as a contactee. I don't push it, off on people because there's so many people out there that can have that handle. I don't need it. But, yeah, I've been working with extraterrestrials for years, and I wish I could just tell you, off air I could tell you some stuff. But there's a huge system right now called maglevs that are all in – there's tunnels between, the Century City Hotel all the way out to Area 51. There's these big machines. They dig a mile or two a day, and they put all these maglevs in. Well, there's a bunch of ETs that are working with our government underground that kind of live on these things and move back and forth. It's all obviously classified stuff, but – oh, yeah, there's a lot going on with extraterrestrials, a lot.
Did you know that when you were with NASA?
No. Oh, no. No, I got in a big fight with NASA over that because back in, that would have been about 1965 when we opened up the Saturn docks down at Seal Beach. That's the second stage that we built when I was at Rockwell. I said that we're going to have a big flying saucer come. Well, we had 400 people standing out one night. We're having a big photo session, and this big UFO came and hovered right outside the facility in Seal Beach. So then that got me a little – I don't know if it got me credibility or in trouble. I never did figure that out.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, and then at that time, there was a guy named J.T. Atwood. He was vice president of all the Rockwell group. He had a bunch of people that worked under him that went out to Roswell and did some engineering on the crashes out there at Roswell and on Max Bradshaw's ranch.
So you do believe something did crash there and it was extraterrestrial?
Yeah, there was two things that crashed there. A small dish that got caught up in that ANFPS-6 radar that I worked on. I think we've discussed that. ANFPS-26 radar. The same radar they had at Montauk, by the way.
Right.
Is a 466-foot antenna, 9 stories tall. We blasted it out over the ocean. Well, they were building that at Sandia Labs. Westinghouse, General Electric, and Sylvania were the prime contractors, and Western Electric, and that Roswell ship got in that beam, and it had a system in it. It's a nuclear reactor. It was a plutonium reactor. It went to critical mass, created what's called a flash point, which heated up inside the ship and fried the guys, but brought the ship down intact. It didn't melt the ship. It just melted the aliens. There were a couple survivors. Matter of fact, one of the survivors, what's the doctor's name? He ended up at Johns Hopkins University in 1951, I believe it was. And then I think his name is Dr. Joseph Mendez, who was working with him. Coined the term EBE, extraterrestrial biological entity. You can check that up on the Internet, too. It's at Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Mendoza.
Why didn't this ET's colleagues come down and get him?
Well, I think they made a treaty with us, later on. I think that treaty was made during the Eisenhower administration, February 2nd, 1962. There was a treaty that was put together. As far as I know, my facts, what people tell me.
Well, that's what I hear, too. Michael Sala tells us that.
Yeah, and, having seen the RO stuff myself, optical fiber, a lot of the ROs, the reverse engineering, that was came out of this stuff, and having a background in magnetrons and cyclotrons and radio frequencies and nuclear reactors, I saw a lot of stuff. The transistor, case in point, supposedly came out of Sony in 52. But nobody can really figure out who invented the transistor. nobody really knows.
Nobody's taking credit for it.
No, nobody took credit for it. And I remember during the Billy Meyer case, and I was doing some stuff with the Pleiadian energies, there was a lot of people over at Motorola in Phoenix that were supposedly a few of the top engineers were having contacts, and a whole bunch of stuff came out of Motorola back in the late 70s. It was not quite explainable either, which ended up, you know, creating like these tremendous circuits, you know, like this 50 million transistors in there, and the technology and resistors and capacitors, and the technology now is called nanotechnology. But then it was a technology that was required to have certain chemicals and certain reactions and certain, well, it was basically a hologram once again. It was a hologram projector. Now, where they got that idea, I don't know. But in simple terms, a holographic projector, what it can do is if you want to make a distributor cap for a brand new car that you're designing, you make a CAD drawing, and you take a helium cadmium laser, and you shoot it into a solution, and it'll solidify, and you pull out a plastic part, which then can be, you know, cast into a mold to make a part. So looking at that technology that way is how this circuitry came about, and it's very refined now. But where did that come from? Nobody seems to
explain. Exactly. Yeah. So how close is the flute to where you are right now?
The what now? Oh, my God. You want to hear that?
Yeah,
I'm right here. Okay. I have to put you on speakerphone.
All right.
You ready?
And then put you back on the phone when you're done.
Yeah, I'm not going to do much because I'm probably going to blow this. If I can get a sound out of this thing, I'll be amazed because I'm so nervous. You
don't knock our ears. I know.
Yeah, hang on.
Spontaneous radio, Fred.
You there?
Yep, I sure am.
Okay, I wish you weren't. Okay, now, with the flute, I can play along with something, but I don't know how any real songs. I can just make some sounds so you can say that you heard me play the flute.
All right, this is Dr. Fred Bell, the inventor of everything.
I got to get my mouth quiet here, huh?
Fred, I think you need a little work there.
That's about all I'm doing. You get the idea I can do it, but I'm scared to death doing this.
Stick to inventing, Fred.
Yeah, keep your day job. But you already actually got sounds out of it, you know.
I
can do better on a clarinet, but we did that a year ago, so I ain't doing a clarinet anymore.
I played my harmonica on the air about a month or so ago.
Oh, well, let's come down here and we'll jam. We'll get paid to leave places.
Yeah, we'll also get paid for low ratings after that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, back to the things you have done. What are you looking at in the future? What's up?
Several things. The hologram technology has taken us, I was describing this to you with one projector. We actually can use four of them and get an even more intense effect. And by the way, when I send you that, I'm going to send you a Star Orb. It's a grounding device, so you'll have to hook it up to keep it grounded. But I have a thing called...
What happens if I'm not grounded?
You'll get really spaced out. You'll think you're on drugs. It's uncomfortable. It's funny, but believe me, I've had a few people not use the Star Orb. It's just this grounding device. You hook it up to ground. It's just a small thing. It hangs in your house, and it grounds out all the ELF energies that aren't...
All right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it gets rid of all that, because when you start doing holograms, the ELF, it's like all of a sudden you have normal hearing, and you turn the hearing aid on, and you can hear, you know, your television set playing on two floors downstairs. That's the sensitivity. That's this thing, you know, because you get very sensitive. So this gets rid of that, you know, oversensitization that you get. And remember that also that this started back, you know, with George D. Loire, you know, years ago, this technology, the holographic stuff, when he would look at one cell of your body, you know, sputum or whatever, and he could tell you all the weaknesses in your body and all the organs that were bad. So this is nothing that's been new around. We've taken it to a very much newer level. That's one invention.
Well, I can't wait for it. I want to try it out.
Yeah, I'm going to hold you to that. Secondly, I'm working on a healing machine, an X1 healing machine. It's in my book, but we've come a long ways with it. And what it does is it analyzes, uses Corellian photography. You put your hand in it, you think a positive, negative thought, five fingers inside a box, and it measures your entire aura frequencies, okay? Then what happens is it sends that, you're looking at a screen, it's like red, and it turns red, and you say to yourself, oh, I see red, you know? And
yeah.
We know it's red, we want to know a given response. And then it goes green, and then it goes violet. But you might be colorblind, and when we get down to green, you might be seeing yellow. Well, that's going to show up because that's cross-phasing on the DNA. which is a problem that we can fix. So then what happens is once we do analysis on that, we put you back in front of the screen, and the screen is no longer a screen. It's a ray. It produces a certain kind of a ray, and that ray hits your body with sound, special sound, and it gets rid of this blockage in your body that caused you to be colorblind, or, you know, if you had a, you know, scar on your arm, it might go away, those kind of things. So that's a little bit more advanced, and we're working away on it, and that's in my book, Rays of Truth. People want to learn about how all that goes. And beyond that, I want to get out and start playing, you know, my normal music. I want to go out and do some more concerts. I love playing music.
And yeah, because I was going to say, you do a lot of that professionally.
Yeah, I've got 5 albums out. They sell all over the world. You know, I've toured around with a lot of big name bands, but I'm so buried with this holographic stuff. It's so much fun, but I, you know, it's like I got to take a break and go out and do some music, do some concerts. I got venues in Europe I can go do and stuff. So I want to do some music in the future too, you know, and do another album, what we call holographic sound, and that's a whole nother deal. Because I've got about 50 synthesizers down in my studio. I've got everything from the old RF2600s that, yes, have, and I have the stuff from the Moody Blues, the Mellotrons, stuff from the Doors, the Continental Vox, and I got all the newest stuff from Rowan, all of it. And so I know how to make it all work. That I can play, you know, better than the flute. So I want to go out and do that. People like it when I play music.
You ever follow the myth that Jim Morrison was still alive?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think?
I don't know. You know, it's hard. You know, he died in the bathtub, and I know in France there's a...
In France, yeah.
Yeah, there's a big momentum up to him. He was a wild and crazy guy. I'll tell you, here's my relationship with Jim Morrison. When I was, you know, younger, when I was working at Rockwell at night, I used to go to Whiskey A Go-Go, and I was like 21, 22 years old. I was a regular at the Whiskey A Go-Go up on Hollywood Boulevard.
Right.
Still there.
You were legal, and it is still there.
Yeah, and I used to sit down. I knew Johnny Rivers. I knew Dobie Gray. I knew Frank Zappa, and I became great friends, and he used a lot of my pyramids before he died. And the Mothers of Invention all had my pyramids on. So I got to hanging out with these guys for a long time. That was Saturday night. But what I didn't get to do is, I'm sorry, this would be Friday night, and during the week, Saturday night, Jim Morrison would come up there and play. And I'll be darned, I never could get in the Whiskey. It was so full of his fans. I could sit down with Dobie Gray, John, you know, Rivers, all those guys, but I never could go in and actually see Jim Morrison. But I'd stand out at the doorway and listen to him, get crazy. Did that for a couple of years, but I never met the guy, but I stood 50 feet from him outside.
Based on what you heard, was he a good performer, Fred?
Oh, yeah. Well, I liked his music, Light My Fire, Lit Mine, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
that Light My Fire, I'd have a couple glasses of wine and listen to that. I was bulletproof, you know, when I was 21 years old. It was amazing music, I thought. I didn't do any acid or any of those drugs. I didn't even know anything about them in those days. But, I mean, he sure did. And then I knew some friends that knew him over there where he lived, over there by Marina Del Rey in Venice Beach. And that, in those days, were you around? You were back in St. Louis then.
I was in St. Louis then.
Yeah, that was a big hippie community.
Actually, I probably was in Detroit by that time.
Yeah, well, I'm from Ann Arbor, don't forget.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was in Detroit until 78.
Okay, yeah. I started Paradigm in 74 here in California. Yeah, and I was in Detroit up until Ann Arbor until 58, then I left, 1958. But I've been back a lot of times, you know.
Have you always been a thinker, even when you were a kid?
Yeah. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I have a brain that doesn't shut off, and I don't mind it. Because people around me think I'm nuts because I run 24/7, 365, you know. But I'm a high operating, you know, high level of energy person, you know. I have a lot of energy. I mean, I could do this show all night with you if you wanted. It wouldn't bother me any. I have fun. But I always do things that I like. Yeah, I've got to do. I do volunteer work. I've been working with a group over here of people that have been, it's called High Hopes, people that have been in car wrecks, you know, and have brain damage, and I've been helping them out and stuff and actually teaching a music class over there. So I do, you know, charity work and stuff, too. That balances my energy. When I go into High Hopes and those people in wheelchairs, and I thank the lucky stars that I've not been in one of those wrecks after, you know, racing cars and stuff and being crazy, and I'm helping them, and they're getting better, and it's slow. It's a very long, long time to get somebody rehabbed, like 20 years. And so when you're in, there's a lot of healing energy, and that kind of balances me out and mellows me out. I need to have that to slow down, a completely different environment than my own. So,
it is. It is a slow process.
Yeah, it is a slow process. So helping people in charities and stuff like that, children that are sick, I do a lot with autistic kids and that gives me a balance. And that's really important to have that balance. Otherwise, I'm not balanced. You know what I mean?
Well, and you, you're smart enough to know that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because I know what happens when I don't do it. I get too crazy. You know, I literally do.
Where, where's the book Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light? Where's that available?
Oh, you can get it on our website. We can put some phone numbers up. I got 2-800 numbers because I never could handle all the calls from these shows, you know.
I know it. They're huge.
Yeah, so I got more 800 numbers and some websites and stuff, but Paradigm.com or Fred Bell. You want the phone numbers now or later or what?
Yeah, I tell you what, why don't you give them out real quickly now.
Okay, two numbers to call us. One is 866-888-6885. That's 866-888-6885. And the other one is the old number, 1-800-729-2603. That's 1-800-729-2603. Those are our two numbers.
Phone calls when we come back. You ready, Fred?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm always ready.
All right. We got it. And there's something for you, Fred. So enjoy it as we go to the top of the hour. We'll be back. And we're back with Dr. Fred Bell. We're going to take your phone calls this hour as well. Your website constantly looks good, my friend. Who does it? Do you do it yourself or do you have a staff?
I have a couple people that do it. Don over at BBS does it for me at bbsradio.com. And then I've got another guy. We're coming up with another site, too, to watch out for. We'll be posting it on our site where I have a lot of archives on one place right now. We're going to be putting a lot of other archives up for a lot of the things we talked about. I have many in-depth shows from the Internet where people can get a lot more information. So we'll have all that up, too. So we're growing. We're going to probably have 3 or 4 websites out there to handle different phases of the stuff that we're into because people are really seem to want the knowledge now. And then we're
Fred, if everything you've worked on over the last few years,
yeah.
Is there one thing that really fascinates you the most?
Well, I honestly think that although I wasn't the holographic stuff that I'm doing, it doesn't fascinate me. It blows me away because it's like – It's just this is ridiculous. It's too simple. You know, I'm a person that likes to make things complicated.
Right.
If something's not broken, I'm going to fix it. I'm that kind of person. And this stuff we've been talking about tonight is real. It's real. It's very advanced. There's a lot of government agencies and universities doing studies on it about how this works with plants and all kinds of other things. And I'm just telling you, I am blown away daily by what I see, especially in the healing area, some of the stuff that we've done with people. And I'm not making any medical claims, but people do heal themselves, but it happens so much faster, you know, and it speeds things up because there's so many environmental blockages out there, including psychic, ELF, you know, the stuff that comes from the satellites, the drugs. I mean, it's just endless what goes on, and I've been able to take each problem and diagnose it and come up with a solution in one at a time. A lot of work with cancer, you know. A lot of work with weak organs and liver problems. And it's not me doing it. There's doctors out there, and as people get to know us, you know, and talk to my staff, we'll give you names and send you places to go to get a heck of a lot more information than what I'm putting out here tonight because this is, you know, I'm always going at a high-speed hyper rate with you because you and I bounce around like the universe.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
By the way, light my fire at break. Give me...
That's for you.
Huh?
That's for you.
Yeah, I know. I like that. And guess what? I could play the flute to that because nobody's listening. You know, I played it all the notes. But
sure you can.
Yeah, but now, yeah, right. You don't believe me. That's okay. No, I actually did. But, I mean, getting up here and playing a flute on the telephone to a whole lot of people, I'm not quite there yet. You know? But at least I'll try, you know.
How quickly does this holograph projector work in that you start getting results and seeing them?
Well, it worked with me. First things were simple. It was working instantaneously, you know. Then it got to working a little bit better. And then I kind of got myself in a funk because I kind of made it go too fast and I got too many projects going and I can't, you know, that's a waste of the energy. So I slowed things down a little bit. I'd like to tell you some more stories, but it's going to come across as too materialistic. But on the healing front, there's a lot of great things that are happening, and they work pretty fast. And we've got this one guy, his name is Steve Barish, and we'll hand his phone number out over our phone lines when people call in. And he will talk to a lot of the listeners out there. And this guy, he does 300 people a month in his clinic. And he's get people to walk in there that are partially paralyzed and stuff. And in a couple of sessions with this technology, they're not paralyzed anymore. And he will give you the name of the people. And they can tell
I want to talk to this guy.
Yeah, I will. I'll give you his phone number.
All right, you said it.
I just want to put it out on the air because that's
not
fair.
No, I understand. Yeah. We don't want to blast him away.
No.
Let's take some calls. East of the Rockies, you're on with Dr. Fred Bell on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is David from Georgia.
Hi, David.
Hey, Fred, George.
Good.
I have a question for Fred.
Okay.
My friend has a patent, distribution rights and manufacturing rights of a patent from a scientist from Germany. A German scientist that was from Iran. His name's Dr. Hassabi.
Okay.
And he invented a generator that runs on water, and right now it's passed all tests, and now it's in front of the energy board. Now, how does that go about, and how does what would fail on that? Or would they turn it down, being the motor companies and gas and oil and pollution?
It depends on how you present it. One of the first things I always tell people, if they're really serious about their inventions, don't get a patent on it, because you're just giving it away. You don't put a patent on it until you got a deal. And then, because what happens is, you put a patent on it, and what happens is you've given it away. Somebody bigger than you comes along and takes it away from you. Go ahead and defend yourself. Can't do it. So the little guy should never get a patent on it. Then present it to the right people that are interested. That's very important.
Okay, because it's a generator that runs on water, and it makes static electricity.
Yeah, no, that I can understand that. Hydrogen's got a tremendous amount of energy in it, and you separate hydrogen from oxygen, and you've got a lot of pure power that makes what you call hydrogen bombs in its purest form in fusion. So
it runs on just tap water, and it makes static electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with some devices that work along those lines. I've actually seen some prototypes in my time.
Okay. You haven't heard about the scientist by the name Hassabi?
His name does sound familiar, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know him intimately, but I've heard of him, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And thanks for your call and your input on that. Pass it on, and he's going to eventually, you know, do a news, try to do a press release on it and everything.
Yeah.
And see what he can get done with.
Hey, get him on the show if he gets this thing going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That'd be a great show.
I talked to George's guy at the desk, Tom, and I've been waiting to, it's probably going to be within a couple months he's going to come on the show and present it and go from there.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being on the program. That would be fascinating.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of stuff like that coming along, and that'll be fascinating. But like I say, especially on the stuff over at Wi-Fi we were talking about, we got it. We're ready to file patents on some of them, but we're not till we get the deal. We've demonstrated it works. There are a few patents, but some proprietary stuff won't be filed until the deal is made. I learned this from the guys that, you know, play big games. You know what I mean? Billionaire type entrepreneurs, and they don't patent stuff until it's ready to go, because it's a vicious world out there when you got something that works, and it's even more when it's going to make a lot of money.
Good point. Wildcard line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Going once. Are you there?
It's an auction.
No, it's too bad. They wait so long sometimes, and then we catch them catnapping, and they miss it.
Yeah, it's late at night for some people.
Yeah, that's true. You're on the air, wildcard line, another line. Go ahead.
Hi, George. This is Mark. I have he's very entertaining, your guest, but I have a problem with a couple of things he said.
Well, fire away, and let's let him respond.
Okay. If he worked on the Philadelphia experiment, which I believe was conducted in 1943, if he was 14 at the time, it means he was born in 1929. But if he was 21 and 22, hanging around the Whiskey when Jim Morrison was playing there, that puts him being born in 1945.
1943. That's what I said on the show. And I worked on it at the Randolph Labs about 8 or 9 years later. So that would have been about 1943, 53, about 55, 56 is about the time I worked on it as a young kid.
Yeah, 43 is when the Philadelphia experiment
occurred.
That's
when it happened, right. We worked on it afterwards in the lab. We had the equipment that was taken off the Eldridge in a lab. That was my point. I thought I said that. I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah.
Okay, what year were you born?
1943, August. Yeah, University of Michigan Hospital. His name. I even got my birth certificate. It was Henry Ford's personal physician that, because my dad was working with Henry Ford, that delivered me, which was kind of cute, you know.
All right. All right. Fine. The only reason that I question it is all this is very entertaining.
Yeah.
But when you talk about weapons being moved to the Bekaa Valley,
yeah,
which is like so ridiculous, I can't tell
you.
Well,
but believe it or not, whether we believe that or not, there have been other sources outside of Fred Bell.
Oh, absolutely.
that have said that.
I've heard that.
I have some in my book. These are old documents. I will be. They'll have some information numbers from the government, and they'll be in my book, Inside Track. That's going to be published. I've been given published information on that. I have it here documented, and I can't put that up on my internet show because it's going in my book. But it's very documented. Believe me, very documented.
I just don't understand why we didn't.
Yeah.
Why we didn't do anything? Yeah. We didn't do anything to Syria.
No.
Once they moved it.
No, and then all the Iraqis are moving over there now. That's where everybody went. Remember Saddam Hussein's daughter went.
They all fled.
Yeah, she went there. Remember the daughter when she went there, the older daughter?
Mm-hmm.
She, right after the war started, there she was. And there's a whole story that goes with that. But that's I don't know why they didn't, it's buried. They know exactly where it is, and it's guarded. The Syrians are guarding that valley. They'd have to have a conflict,
I think he's going to get sentenced pretty soon. I mean, they were talking about October, but that's been pushed back.
The Saddam?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they'll never execute him. They'll keep him around forever.
I agree with you. Even though if they sentence him to execution, I don't think they'll do it.
No, they won't. I know
first,
they won't.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah. Hi, George, and hi, Mr. Bell.
Hi there.
I have two quick questions, and then I'll take the answer off of the air.
Okay.
why couldn't they mess with their minds by putting a big hologram up in the air above Baghdad, let's say, and then use one of these things like CARP to, put into their minds like I'm Allah or whoever their God is and stop all this fighting right now and killing your people and or I'll destroy you, and it seemed like something like that would work because those people are kind of goofy anyway,
Well, they're doing something that's just the opposite of that. They're actually putting out energy, something like HARP, that actually makes them more angry.
Oh, I see.
Because terrorism, terrorism is, very important right now to stabilize our economy, believe it or not. It's kind of sick because they want to take, we lost habeas corpus. That was a great thing. And let me explain real quick, if you have a second, how that works. I know a guy that was recently indicted by the Post Office Department. What he was doing was this. He was taking cars, from different states and registering them in one state that had a very low registration fee, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What happened was he got arrested by the feds. Postmaster General came out and arrested him. They do that, mail fraud. He got into court. When he got into court, they said, we got another charge against you. And he says, what? Well, you printed all these brochures anti-government. You were saying that Bush is that and this is that, and this is now a federal charge. Now, that's what happens when you don't have habeas corpus. I saw this happen. I know the attorney that's defending this guy. As long as you don't get in trouble and you badmouth the government and you put out pictures, you've got your freedom of speech and
well,
print.
Well, one of our guests, Fred, you've heard the name Steve Quayle before, right?
Yeah, of course.
He, apparently on his little radio show today, he said that he had heard that the government is going to ban all radio talk shows. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but it's interesting to see where he even
They'd like to do that. They'd like to do it. But remember, once you're indicted for something, you've lost your constitutional freedoms, and anything you did that was not against the law before indictment is now against the law. That's what habeas corpus means, and a lot of people don't get that one, okay?
Hey, that's George.
Yes, sir.
This is for you, George.
Okay.
I'd sure like to see some of the UFO reports again from Peter Davenport. I think those were really neat.
Yeah, I just had Peter on about 2 weeks ago. You must have missed him.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
I don't know how I missed
him. Yeah, he had a great one. About a UFO sighting over Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well,
he pops in every once in a while
MUFON,
when you least expect it.
You could have MUFON on once in a while or something.
The MUFON report.
Yeah, thank
That's
you.
That's not bad. All right, thanks.
On the UFO thing, remember, it's against, there's pretty much a law, I forget what this law is called, but it does not allow outside information from other governments to come on the AP wire services. It's another banishment of our freedoms. So the UFO stuff that's going on all over the place, it's either localized, like in Chicago there, or you get it on the Internet from one of the Internet, but it does not come across. You won't ever see it on a radio show or a TV show. That's another one of our little freedoms we don't have anymore.
What do you think about the guy in the United Kingdom, Gary McKinnon, who broke into the Pentagon and NASA websites to find out if they knew anything about UFOs and anti-gravity propulsion. He could get 70 years for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not a problem. Not a problem.
Yeah, he did commit a crime. He broke into, he hacked into those websites, but I don't think it deserves 70 years.
No, no, but then there's another thing. You know what's illegal? I forget the legislation that was passed. I used to know the HR number, the House resolution number, that makes it illegal for you to be a contactee, and that's probably going to come up. Oh, yeah.
There's, come on.
I swear to God, I have that.
You're saying that there is a bill or a law?
A law. A law that says you are not allowed to, without, you know, contact alien nations, not meaning Indians, but it's, I forget how the wording on it, but I have it here. You know, I should put that.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I have it here.
Oh, were they talking about extraterrestrials?
Yeah, well, Bill Cooper led me to it. Of course, he's not around anymore, as you know.
No,
he was killed.
He died in that gunfight.
Yeah, and I knew his wife, his kid, and that other guy that was on there that had that shootout over at Dulce, New Mexico. I was at three times I was with film crews at Dulce, New Mexico, and ultrasound equipment. And that's
Who was that?
Huh?
Who was that at Dulce?
I'm trying to remember this guy's name. He's he was one of the, is the guy that didn't have any fingers on one hand because he'd been shot. I'll have to remember his name here. It'll come up in a minute. But I've seen some stuff on the website recently. It surfaced from his historical stuff. He wrote a book. He worked for the government. He was involved in that firefight at Dulce. He was one of two survivors, and then they took him out. A few years ago, they found himself hung, and you know, he committed suicide hanging himself. But I have seen too many people you know, get killed by these different groups in the government, which there's a new group that I don't even, it's just beyond the NSA that's out there now. And if you get, there's a place where you cross the line and then you have a problem. And he did that. And then Bill Cooper did the same thing.
I was going to say, what did you think of Bill Cooper?
Well, I knew Bill when he was sober. I knew Bill when he drank. But I also know.
And there were two different people.
Two different people, like a lot of, you know, serious drinking problem people. But he had major, major contacts. Very big contacts. And what his problem was is that, you know, there's a place where you get your information from the government and you put out the information in a non-biased way, and you don't bring in like personalities like Mr. So-and-so and such, but you just bring it out in generalization, and you can make some pretty brash statements. But he didn't do that. He wanted to get personal and name names, expose some CIA people that he knew. He should have done that. And that's how he ended up. That, you know,
was he accurate, or was he up there in the clouds?
No, he was very accurate when he was writing his book, because I was researching with another guy named Richard Murray, who was a researcher for both of us. That
Behold
was connected to the Rand Corporation. Remember the Rand Corporation? I was inside the Rand Corporation with Richard Murray, and that was a think tank for a lot of different things. I used to physically go up to the Hughes think tank in Malibu. I was in there many times. Because that, you know, goes way back, but that's what I did. And I knew these people, and I knew a lot of stuff that I didn't talk about. I still, even today, like on the government stuff, on the Homeland Security thing, I'm just giving you a general lay of the land. I'm not getting specific at all. You know, I know not to do that because it's not very good for the national security. Just say it's happening, because if you research it, it's there. And that's what you got to do. At least I do. I've learned to keep alive and be respected and not release this stuff and not get blazingly drunk and start spouting off semi-classified stuff, you know.
And that's what Cooper did.
And that's what Cooper did, and I saw him do it. Because the conventions we used to do, some of these whole life shows, some of these other conventions, we had a lot of law enforcement coming, attendees. We had a lot of government people coming.
He used to get into a few little scraps every once in a while at these conventions, too, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he put out more than a few scraps when he got really loaded. You get him in a bar after the convention was over at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, he'd go after you.
Yeah, he'd go after you, and he'd go after the government. And the government people were always spying on us. This is back in the 80s, and this was hot stuff. I mean, we still had the Berlin Wall up, and they, you know, the CIA was all over the place in those days. And
so you don't think Cooper was nuts?
Well, when he was drunk, yeah.
But when he was drunk, he was.
Yeah, right. But when he was sober, he was very brilliant. He was very brilliant, very different person.
And accurate?
Yeah, yeah. But he wouldn't. His sources in the government wouldn't have given him all that information that came out in that book that he wrote, the Pale Horse book. He wouldn't have had all the information had they known what he was going to do with it and turn it upside down.
No, that's a good point. Stay with us, Fred. Back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. More than 50 new species of animals and plants have been discovered in a lost world-type area of the island of Borneo in just 18 months, according to scientists. Fred, that stuff is so incredible, where you continue on this planet to find things that you just never knew existed.
Oh, I know.
And the same could be, you know, just about anything.
Yeah. Well, there's so much. In South America is like another world down there. Do you know that?
Yeah.
And then, by the way, the guy's name was Phil Schneider. And he was strangled by piano wire in 1996.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he the one also had the theory of the hollow earth?
Yeah, I think he was part of it, but that's what he did. He was a geologist, and he was running those underground digging machines, and they ran into the aliens. That's how they ran into them. And his dad was a U-boat commander who came over here on Operation Paperclip, and he was developed a lot of these cameras that we used in satellites. That was Phil's into the government, into the intelligence field. It was through his dad, who was a U-boat commander in World War II. So, he specialized in underground stuff. You can look him up on the internet, and you'll see his name there.
He may have been a guest of Art's a long time ago.
Yeah, before he died. Yeah. He always said that he would probably get, you know, because I've seen his lectures, and he would hold up his hand at some point, and his fingers were gone. And I saw some stories about when it happened. He was pretty young, and some pictures from back there. And he had an amazing story, but it pretty much checked out. Because when I used to go up to Dulce, when I was up there filming, I have a treaty with the Jicarilla Apaches. The Jicarillas, the guy that run that place was a very famous artist, and a lot of his paintings, like Custer's Last Stand, that were in the Smithsonian. So they got a lot of money. So they built a Best Western Inn up there. It was like a Hilton in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I used to go up there with film crews. I had Sean Morton up there once. We went up there, and Jim Delatelson, and a lot of these names. And one night I was up there because I had a treaty to go on the reservation anytime, anywhere. I was out in the middle about 15 miles out from the reservation, on the reservation, but out of town. And then I ran across about 1 o'clock in the morning, this little, like, 15-year-old girl, and she was just having a fit. She was screaming, and she was scared. So I pulled over at a big truck, and I got her inside. And I said, "What happened?" She said, "Oh, my God, my boyfriend and I had a big fight, and he threw me out, and I'll get abducted out here. You know, I'll never make it back. These things come, and they grab us." And it's true. There were so many abductions of those Indians up there in Dulce, because that was a real hostile environment back in the early 80s, all this was going on. That's when
when she said these things grab us, what kind of things was she talking about?
She's describing the grays.
Okay.
Remember what's his name up there had all his cows, had like a huge amount of cows, cored out, you know, with no blood on the ground.
Right.
Remember his name, and he works. He won't talk about it. A friend of mine, who owned a very large company, went up there one time coming back from a trade show, and he was up there at Dulce, and I told him how to go in and use this and do that, and he went in there, and when he came out the next day, in his big, first of all, a ship came down near his motorhome. He had like one of the most expensive motorhomes, and it killed all the batteries. And his sister was going to go out, and he threw her on the floor and says, "Don't you dare do that, because if you go out and do that, you're going to be abducted here. This is dangerous. This is not fooling around." The next day, he got followed out of Dulce all the way back to his house, and they set up surveillance across the street from his house in Phoenix, down the street. Actually, it was a nice neighborhood where he lived. And finally, after about 6 weeks, he went and confronted him because they were spying on him, and the guy was packing up. And he showed him his credentials. He said he was the Naval Bureau of Ships. And he was, John says, "Why are you spying on me? You know, I'm an industrialist." He's like a very big guy, you know, in the business. And
yeah.
In Hillfield, he's like a billionaire. And he's not afraid of anybody. And he approached this guy and he says, "Well, we didn't know who you were." He says, "You had that little skirmish up in Dulce, but we know you're okay now, so we're leaving." And that really happened. I mean, I don't make these stories up. There's no reason for it, but that Dulce was a hotbed. Now it's pretty cooled out now. It's not so bad up there anymore, but it was a hotbed back in the 80s.
All right, back to the phones we go. Let us go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Beth. I'm calling from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
Hi. I am curious about the chemtrails and the bromine. If they're doing this to affect the general population, what I don't understand is why it's not affecting them, whoever they are. What are they doing to protect themselves and their families?
Good question. Here's exactly what's happening. If you notice, you know, they're closing a lot of above-ground bases. Military mostly now is going underground. That's why they have all these tunnel systems that are running all over the place now. They run on what's called maglev. That's a machine, a train that goes on a magnetic levitation system. It's not that complicated. And so a huge installations are being put underground now, because that seems to be generally where people are going to end up, especially with the global warming going on, all these chemicals. And they also are using devices that are pretty interesting, something like what we make, to prevent these chemicals from harming you. We've developed systems here in my work that you can, I can test you, I can put bromine in your hand and test you with a nuclear receptor, and you'll be strong with it. You'll be able to transmute the energy. So they have these energy transmutation devices, somewhat similar to the ones that I make. I've seen them. So they take preventive measures, like, you know, if you're going to use mustard gas on somebody, have a gas mask. And so that's what they do. And so they have these preventive things. They have they're on nutritional programs. And, you know, Codex, they're trying to take away our nutrition. Our last stand against this is, one of them is nutrition. And
well, didn't they do that in Europe already too?
It's 192 countries. I'm working with Dr. Riva LeBeau, who's married to Major General Stubblebine from the Army, and they're leading the movement against it. She's over in with the president of India right now. They just came back from Thailand. And I talk to her all the time. And here's the deal. Here's the definition. Anything that you put in their body, your body, lettuce, anything that's healthy, and you can see any measurable biological change, it's because they want to make it illegal. So you theoretically can't have fresh food anymore. Because that's how strict it is. Look it up. Codex Ametrius on a website. Go to one of my websites at BBS. You'll see it there, a direct link. Check it out. It's really happening. I'm in the middle of this one, you know.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. George?
Yes, hi.
Okay, hi. My name is Ebony Earth. First of all, I want to say thank you for just having Dr. Fred Bell on. Hi,
you
Dr.
Are
Fred
welcome.
Bell.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you.
Oh, well, you're awesome. And my question was, first of all, I'm enjoying your energy, really. Actually, but at the same time, I wanted to know more about the WFWL, the stock market.
Yeah.
And also if you can go into as far as what other good stocks that we could invest in. And at the same time, what about the hologram and how can I visit your home?
Well, you need to sign up. You go to our website, Paradigm.com.
Okay.
Or call one of the toll-free numbers, which we'll give out in a minute, and that will give you the information how to come to a seminar and then come to, which is in June here in Laguna Beach, in this beautiful resort, and then you can come up and see this stuff.
Okay, and I will.
Yeah. As far as, I don't give stock information because, believe it or not, I'm not much at stocks. I don't gamble in Vegas, and I don't do stocks. I just happen to be involved
with
one company. So I couldn't tell you anything about the stock market other than I know. When I used to have my electronics business, I used to invest in companies, you know, on the side as fun, in companies that paid their bills. So when I was doing a stock investigation on any kind of a stock that's over the counter or on the pink sheets, find out if they pay their bills. Do a P&L on them. That tells you whether they got real money or not.
Okay.
That's what you got to do.
That you had said earlier on the show, though, you said WFWL.
Yeah, that's the number, WFWL.
Okay, and what was the I just got the number to it. What was actually the technology?
The technology is many different types of sensors monitored to a proprietary computer system that uplinks through the orange code to the NSA computers, and it's on every single container. That's where it's headed to go, on every single container coming into this country.
Okay.
And there's several people trying to do that, but this company's done it, and they're the only ones that's proven it's done.
Okay, and then one more last question I guess I want to ask you. What about, what's your take on, like, stones, gems, and crystals?
Now, what is that?
Like, as far as, what's your take, what's your opinion on stones?
Oh, we use all of that stuff.
Crystals.
When we use our Stargate technologies that we demonstrate, we use the holographic projectors, we use lasers, we use big, powerful, like, 100-pound clusters that we fire massive laser amounts of energy into to release these huge photons. I mean, if you look at my book, we're on top of a vortex in Laguna Beach, which is a very well-known vortex. It's even stronger than the ones over in Sedona. So we use the natural forces, you know, the natural vortex forces, along with the other forces that we've learned, and we engineer it all into one synchronous machine. It's sort of like a nuclear reactor that you're in, but it's all a natural frequencies to the body. It's not alien to you. However, like I was telling George, you do need grounding equipment. Like that Star Orb I was telling him, is very necessary to have this stuff grounded out, or it will flip you upside down. It's the best way I can describe it, you know.
Okay, thanks for that. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good.
Bad and Thad in Fort Worth, Texas. Look forward to seeing you in Austin. Next month.
June 27th. Jan 27th, yeah.
I will be there. Dr. Bell, have you ever read any of Carlos Castaneda's works?
All of it.
What do you think about his stuff?
Well, you know, when you look at psychedelic mushrooms and you look at the structure of the mushroom, and then you take a seashell and you put it up to your ear and you hear it, okay? That same, if you look at the cross section of a mushroom, it has what we call chordal chambers, and the chemical substance and the physical shape and the geometry of a mushroom, when it's taken into the body, displaces serotonin. And when you displace serotonin, it opens up the neurons in the synapses in the brain and your aura field to higher frequencies that people would call supernatural, but they're really just above the normal common day. And so that's what he was all about, you know. It was about reaching and attaining that state of, you know, some people call it enlightenment, but it's a temporary state. And there's a lot of disciplines of, you know, eating and exercises and yoga that need to go with it to make it a fluid thing. It's kind of like...
Dr. Bell, did you ever read... The Book of the Subgenius or Revelation X, by any chance?
No.
A lot of things that you're talking about are just in that book. I mean, it's just an incredible, every little conspiracy and the aliens and things like that, it's all...
Yeah, well, the Pleiadians taught me, one of the things I was studying with the Pleiadian technology was how their ships are made. And they had one process of a greenhouse where they would actually create a large spore that would be like a giant mushroom that would be like 20 feet across. And they would have all these chord chambers in it, like a mushroom does. Then they would do like Leo Fender did when he was a guitarist. He would shoot a die into a tree and then get the rings in the tree to become a certain color and make a beautiful wildwood guitar. Well, that's what the Pleiadians did, and they would create a harder than metal substance that would be like a hull of their ship. And that's the same technology. It's all there. I got that written up in my book, Rays of Truth, but it's explained in there. But this is, and it had to, then in the greenhouse, had to have certain kinds of sound, certain kinds of soil. And I have seen, and this is getting down to nanotechnology where you take these things called buckyballs, which are very small, about 4 or 5 microns across, and you put them in a carbon fiber, and you can make a piece of hair strong enough to lift a Mack truck, something the size of your hair. That's the technology that we're coming into, and that's the technology that they had already, and that's where we learned it from.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks.
Oh,
couple more minutes to go, and that is it. Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Hello, Dr. Bell.
Hi.
I've got a question. This is regarding the chemtrail.
Okay.
Are we the only country that has an active spraying program?
No. No, it's on. There's. I know that England has it. I know we've got it. I'm sure some of the European countries have it. I don't know who all where has it anymore, but it's around. Countries like Japan won't have anything to do with it, and there's certain countries that don't want the consciousness to
mm-hmm.
So it depends on the consciousness of the particular country. It's like when I used to formulate vitamins, you know. When I formulated vitamins, I could use Fotai, ginseng, and Gotu-Kola in Japanese products because in World War II they found that when you took that into your body, the effects of radiation weren't there. But I take Fotai, ginseng, and Gotu-Kola to the German FDA and they say, no way, but you can do B-complex. So I could do B15, B17 on trilocytes. Then I turn back and go to Japan, can I do B-complex over here? No, it's still illegal. So that's how it works. Each country takes a piece of it and does what they want with it, and that's the way the chemicals are with the contrail.
All right. West of the Rockies, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. This is Ernie, Fresno, California.
Hey, Ernie.
You and Dr. Bell about 3 years ago about that tinnitus ringing in the ear.
Yeah, that's where the myelin sheath is deteriorating.
Well, you suggested using
BC lecithin.
Well, okay, now how much of that? I've been using 6,000 milligrams of essential oils for the last 3 years, and it hasn't helped much.
No, you got to use phosphorylated choline complex, 1,200 milligrams, three times a day with the oil. You have to have that.
Phosphorylated?
Yeah, phosphorylated. Phosphatidyl, choline complex.
Yeah.
That's what you need. And then vitamin E, primrose oil, and flaxseed oil. And oil blend, and you will fix the problem. And it takes more now because the ELF is much worse now than it was a few years ago. It's way worse now. We got satellites up there blowing it out, and of course the HARP stuff going on, which is a whole other show here someday. We'll do HARP, and that's a lot of bad energy on the human nervous system.
Wildcard Line, you're on with Dr. Fred Bell.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm Steve from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have a question for Mr. Dr. Bell.
Go ahead.
In the last hour, you spoke about a necklace that you had invented and that worked somehow to restore your DNA or work
It respirals DNA. The human body, when you're born, you have 46 base pairs per turn. That tells the human fetus to come out of the to give birth. That's the signal. As soon as you take your first breath, you got 34 base pairs per turn. You've lost 25% of your life in your first 30 seconds. When you're 18, you have 18 base pairs per turn, and when you're 50, you've got 6. So it reverses that process electronically.
Yeah. Okay, and I thought that you said that it worked on resonation.
Yeah, it does. It works on Earth resonant generation because the entire human body works that way. You know, as we've changed the Earth, for example, in Methuselah lived during Atlantean times. We had a lifespan of 650 years. Today, then for a while, we the turn of the century, we created a lot of things. We died of tuberculosis and arthritis. Then we changed the frequency of the planet around. We're living longer again. So it depends on what the frequency of the world is, how your DNA should be.
We're not about 100 years ago, Fred, a 50-year-old was old, wasn't he?
Yeah, but then, 100 years ago. That's where trace minerals came in the early 20s. When trace minerals were discovered by the Indians, then the arthritis was with, because arthritis was the first condition to kill people. It usually led to pneumonia. And then they turned that around with trace minerals, and that became a big industry, which it is today. And, you know, and so after that was turned around, then other things came along, and then people started living longer. And as a result of living longer, then all the poisons from your aluminum and all that showed up. So now we had Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, which didn't show up because nobody lived long enough eating out of aluminum utensils and putting all kinds of chemicals in your body. So if we clean our bodies up, I guarantee you, we can easily hit 150 even now. It's not a problem.
I had all my old mercury fillings taken out.
That was smart.
Ago. Yep.
Yeah, you can't have those. I had mine. Actually fell out when I started wearing a pyramid because I make a thing called a power dome. You wear it on your head, and it takes all the poisons out of your body. And the first thing that falls out is your fillings. I got a lot of brand-new enamel-built teeth in here now.
Send me the holographic projector, and I'll test it.
Yeah, I want you to.
All right.
I'm going to. I'm going to send you three things and a star orb.
How about some suggested questions, or do I just go for it?
Well, you can contact me and I'll explain it to you. You know,
okay.
I'll hook it up and everything. You know, not a problem.
All right, Fred, thank you so much.
Okay, can I give out my last numbers here?
Go for it.
Okay, 1-800-729-2603, and if you're local in California, we have a 949-376-3904. 376-3904, 949 prefix, and 1-800-729-2603. See you around. Look forward to talking to everybody. Give us time to get back to you. It takes a few days. We get back to everybody.
And it's Paradigm.com. Thank you, Fred. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ian Punnett, Roch Mitchell, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.